When you derive your sense of security from your money rather than from your God, that's idolatry. When you derive your sense of satisfaction from money rather than God, that's idolatry. And you don't want to pursue that. Godliness is characterized by a pursuit of God, not of money.
Have you ever wondered why some Christians make lots of money while other men and women devoted to God struggle to pay their bills? Well, if you're in that first category, if you prosper financially, is that a sign of God's blessing, or could wealth actually create more problems for you? Find the answers today to that question. John MacArthur on Grace to You is showing you how to handle your finances. The study's called, Whose Money Is It Anyway? Now, to find out if you're thinking about your resources the right way, using them for the glory of God, stay with us as John begins today's lesson.
In 1 Timothy 6:10, it says, the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. It's not money that is the root of evil. It is the love of it. And some people have a lot of it and don't love it, and some have none and love it like crazy. It's the love of it. And the love of money produces lots of things. First of all, it brings problems. When you love money, you want money, you're motivated by money, you're trying to get rich, achieve money, get wealth, rather than be concerned about how well you do something, you're concerned about how rich you're going to get doing it. Verse 9 of 1 Timothy 6 says, but those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. And then in verse 10 it says, and some by longing for money have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pain. Many a pain. That's why millionaires don't smile. It brings all kinds of problems and worries and anxieties and temptations and traps. Secondly, love of money makes you forget God. We remember, of course, Proverbs 30, where it says, give me neither poverty nor riches. Why? Lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be in want and steal and profane the name of my God. I don't want more than I need. I don't want less than I need. I don't want to be in a position where if I have more than I need, I trust in my riches and forget God. Love of money can lead people to forget God. What do they need God for? They've got it all. They command their lives. It's all in the bank. They have plenty. There's no dependency there. I'm reminded of the great story of C.T. Studd, the outstanding athlete, a great athlete, a cricketer in England, and a world-class, world-famous who felt the call of God on his life to go to the mission field. He happened to be from a family that was extremely wealthy. He inherited some old money and massive fortune and felt that it would compromise his spiritual life. So prior to going to the mission field, he gave every cent of it away and went to the mission field with nothing but dependence on God. He feared the temptation to forget God and to trust in his money. Let's pick it up from there. A third thing I might say about the love of money is that when you love money, you begin to trust in it. And that's kind of what we were just saying. You not only forget God, but you turn your affection toward your money. We say, hey, I don't have anything to worry about. I'm set. Everything is great in my life. I've got my bank account built up. I've hedged against every conceivable dilemma that could come along in the future. I've provided for everything as well as I can provide and maybe a little left over. I can take care of myself. I've got all the money I need for the rainy day. I'm covered on every front. And then you have to ask the question, am I trusting in God or am I trusting in my gold? And I'm not saying it's wrong to have some savings. I'm not saying it's wrong to have an insurance policy. But what I am saying is that when you love money, you will begin to trust money and not God. In Job 31, Job, and he knew what it was to have it and what it was to lose it. Job 31, 24 and following, if I have put my confidence in gold, if I have gloated because my wealth was great, I would have denied God above. If I trust in my riches, I don't trust in God. And I can honestly tell you, I want to be in my life in a place where I need to trust God. Because I love the joy of seeing God work in that time. And the Lord does such wonderful things. Proverbs 11:28 says, he who trusts in his riches will fall. The somewhat liberated Living Bible chooses to translate that this way. Trust in your money and down you go. And the rest of the verse says, trust in God and flourish like a tree. And 1 Timothy 6, verse 17 says, command them that are rich in this world not to be proud nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God. Trust in the living God. He later on says, tell the rich to be rich in good works. Tell them to be eager to distribute their riches and willing to share, verse 18. Sadly, sometimes the more money people have, the less they're willing to part with it. Riches seem to obscure their perspective. And they tend to isolate them. Rich people tend to get more and more isolated because their world is more and more insulated. And the walls around their house are wider. The fences around their yard are broader. And their isolated world is a world that doesn't touch those who struggle with the little things in life. And so they're cut off from those in need, so busy bumping elbows with those who have no need. It's easy to lose perspective. It's easy to begin to trust in your money and not trust God. A fourth thought about loving money is that it's easy to be deceived. Money is very deceptive. In fact, Mark 4:19 and Matthew 13 talks about the deceitfulness of riches, which chokes the word. Riches lie. They deceive. When you have money, you can easily think you have everything. It lulls you into the deception that all is well in your life. And some people might even think of these people running around preaching this prosperity gospel that if you're rich, that means that God likes you extra special. And you're in abundant favor with God because you have a lot of money. So everything must be okay with you. I mean, if you go to someone and you say, you know, I just want you to know that I think this is a false teacher. It's not uncommon for someone in that movement, a movement of the prosperity gospel, to say, well, how can you say he's a false teacher when God has made him so rich? God must be pleased. Riches can deceive you about spiritual reality. They can deceive you about whether or not you are being blessed. Riches can steal your heart. They can deceive you about what's important in life. And then another point, a love of money can lead a person to the place where they compromise convictions, compromise the Bible, compromise the Word. It's been said that every man has his price. And I suppose we've all been asked the question, what's your price? That's the price at which you compromise your convictions. And it's like that story of the author who was at the New York dinner party in a high-class New York hotel. And he was sitting next to a beautiful woman. He was stunned by her beauty, and he couldn't take his eyes off her. And eventually he leaned over to her during the meal and asked if she would spend the night with him for $100,000. Rather demurely, you know, she dropped her face and looked up at him and said, blushingly, yes. To which he replied, well, would you spend the night with me for $10? And she said, what do you think I am? He said, we've already established that. We're only dickering for the price. I suppose that everybody in the world has their price. Christians shouldn't have a price. You know, some people would lie to get a job promotion. Some people would falsify some documentation or an application. Some would mute the testimony of Jesus in order to be popular. That's selling out. Some people will sell out to be thought of as intellectual. Some people will sell out to gain some possession or to be accepted by some well-known or prominent person or whatever. It's amazing through the years. I've had a responsibility through the years to raise a lot of money. I never thought when I was a young man called to the ministry in the seminary that I would ever have to be responsible to raise money. Nobody ever told me that. But that happens, folks, all the time in my life when you have a church and you start out with one little building over here and a little education building, and this place was covered with chicken coops. We've had to raise a tremendous amount of money to build this church. We've had to do that in terms of the development of our radio and tape ministry and around the world, our missions work around the world, the master's college and the master's seminary. And there's never extra, and you're always just on your knees and praying. And occasionally someone will come along with a promise that they'll make the money available if you'd be surprised how many people have asked me if I would be willing to tone down my convictions or even to take a different theological viewpoint. It happens. It's amazing. If I would be willing to sign on, change my views, about what I believe the Bible teaches, people would be glad to give money. Well, that's a temptation, isn't it? That's a test to see what your price is. You shouldn't have one. There isn't a point in your life when you're willing to compromise convictions, compromise what you know the Bible teaches, what you know God wants, what you know is truth for anything, monetary or earthly. And that's why you've got to go back to Matthew 6 and seek first the kingdom, right? Nothing competes with that. But when people love money, they sell out for money. They compromise their convictions. It happens all the time. I watch ministries do that. I watch well-known large ministries have huge donors who come in and force them to change their convictions to get the money. Very common. Well, another thought, loving money can lead you to build on an unstable foundation. It's what we said a little earlier, you know, put your hope in money and down you go. To look at Proverbs 23, verses 4 and 5, it says it this way. When you set your eyes on wealth, it is gone. Wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. It just comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes, it flies away. And when you try to build your life on it, it's sinking sand. It's like building a skyscraper on the beach with no foundation. Absolute folly. Loving money will lead you to build on an unstable foundation. The only stable foundation is the truth and the love of God and the glory of God. Well, there's another one. Love of money can make you proud. It does. Boy, it's hard to control your ego when you have money because there's so many ways to parade it. You can parade it through your house. You can parade it through your lifestyle, through so many ways. It makes you feel self-sufficient. It makes you feel superior. It makes you feel elevated above the hoi polloi, the common folks. In Deuteronomy 8, it says this, "Beware lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments and His ordinances and His statutes, which I am commanding you today, lest when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply and all that you have multiplies, then your heart becomes proud." It's not wrong to have your flocks multiply. God isn't saying you can't have a good house. God isn't saying you can't live in it and you can't have some silver and gold. What He is saying is when that happens and you love that and you forget God, then your heart becomes proud. If you see it as a gracious gift from Him to be used for His glory and the advance of His kingdom and the benediction and blessing of all those around you, that's a right perspective. But Proverbs 28:11 is right when it says, "The rich man is wise in his own conceit. With riches comes pride." Unless you deal with that, your riches lead you to that sin. In fact, Jeremiah, in speaking about the rich, said of them, "Thou," speaking of God, "art near to their lips, but far from their mind." It's very superficial, their concern about you. They're into money. With your mouth, you worship God, but there's no room for Him in your mind, your heart. And then just a couple of final things. When you consider money as your God, and when you, in an idolatrous way, worship money or love money, you are stealing from God. You will not do what is right. You will not render to God what is God's. You will rob God. Malachi 3, will a man rob God? I mean, look, it's a pretty stupid thing when you think about it. If somebody asked you the question, if God were around, would you rob Him? Well, I don't think so. First of all, He's omniscient, so He'd know what I was doing. Secondly, He's omnipotent, so He'd probably kill me if I tried to rob Him. I wouldn't rob Him. Well, if Jesus were here, Jesus is our Lord, and He had a purse with some money in it, would you rob Jesus? Oh, are you kidding? Rob Jesus? It's a paralyzing thought. I don't even want to think it. Well, you do it. That's the point of the question. Will a man rob God? I mean, is that dumb or is that dumb? Yet you have robbed me. And the people say, well, how have we robbed you? And He says, in tithes and offerings, you haven't given what is mine, what belongs to me. So He says, bring all the tithes into the storehouse and I will pour out on you a blessing. I love that because He could have said, bring it in or else I'll chop your head off. But He doesn't. It's a very gracious act of loving kindness. Just bring it, and I'm waiting to unload the blessing. Boy, you say, I'll tell you one thing, I'll never rob God. Oh, boy, not me. I'd never rob Jesus. Oh? You know, you say, well, where's the storehouse? I don't know. Great Western Savings? First Interstate Bank? Your sock in the closet? Your pocket? Your mutual fund? I don't know where. The storehouse is wherever the stuff's stored, isn't it? But there's supposed to be some of it in God's storehouse. And if it isn't there, you've robbed Him. And when you love money, you rob God. So when you rob God, it's because you, what? Love money. Well, a last point along the line of loving money. You not only rob God, you rob others. 1 John 3, a couple of verses there really make this crystal clear. Verse 17, whoever has the world's goods and beholds his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? The question is, if you don't give money to someone in need, are you a what? Christian. That's the question. That's the question. Because the love of God abides in every believer. Is that not true? Doesn't Romans 5 say that the love of God has been shed abroad in our hearts? So the question is, if you see someone have need and you don't meet the need, how can we say you're a Christian? How can we say you're a Christian? You're robbing your brother. And how can Christians be recognized? Verse 14, we know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brethren. He who does not love abides in death. I mean, if you can see a brother in need and not meet the need, the question is, are you a Christian? Loving money will make you behave like a non-Christian. That's the bottom line. Well, loving money leads to all kinds of negative results. And we've just gone through a number of them. Now, to close, there's a third point. I talked about the morality of money. I talked about the love of money. Now, let me talk about acquiring money. I'm going to tell you how to acquire money. I'm going to tell you how to earn money God's way, how to get money God's way. But first, I want to tell you how not to get it. Okay? Let me give you some ways not to get money. One, you're not to steal it. You say, well, I know that. Well, just to reiterate that. Let him that stole steal no more, Paul said. Robbery is the violation of the Ten Commandments. Don't steal money. You say, I would never steal money. Oh, how about Psalm 37:21? The wicked borrows and never pays back. What's that? That's an act of wickedness. There are lots of ways to steal. Amos 8:5, Hosea 12:7 talk about dishonest business tactics. Cheating people out of their money, overcharging people, selling them a cheapened product. I suppose if we had a few contemporary Amoses and Hoseas today, they might preach a sermon on giving 4 hours work for 8 hours pay. Or they might preach a sermon on exaggerating the deductions on your income tax form. Or they might give a sermon on padding your expense account. Or they might give a sermon on extravagant credit card purchases that are way beyond your capability. And there's money you don't even have and really can't even pay. Stealing money is incompatible with a Christian life, and there are lots of ways to do it. But you're not to get money that way. And you're not to take it from people by cheating them in any sense. A second way not to get money is by charging people exorbitant interest. The Bible is very clear about this. You can read about it all throughout the Old Testament. I'm not going to take you through all the passages. It's called usury, U-S-U-R-Y. It means exorbitantly high interest. You say, well, look, if the guy doesn't want to borrow the money, then he can go borrow it somewhere where it's cheaper. That isn't the point. The point is usury is a form of extortion that preys on people who have no choice. if you want to borrow money for something, your house, your car, or whatever purpose you want to borrow money, you go to a place, you demonstrate your financial capability by filling out a form, you show them that you have the resources and the income and the financial capability to pay that debt off, you're simply buying money because you need it now and you're willing to pay for it in the future. That's fine. But that's not where usury comes into play. You're going to go out and you've got a good credit record, so you're going to get the best interest you can get and you're going to prove to people you can pay it. Usury is what is charged people who are without the ability to pay back. In other words, they are desperate. They're those kinds of people who have nowhere to turn, and so they're taken advantage of by people because they can't qualify anywhere. Certain places will loan the money. Certain people will loan the money and charge them an exorbitant rate of interest. They have really no choice because they're in a desperate situation. And in the midst of their need, there is a taking advantage. That's what the Bible forbids. That's usury. Exorbitant interest charged to someone who is in real need. Don't ever loan money to someone in need. Give it to him. Just give it to him. Give him what he needs, if you can. Don't make money off his trials. And then another way not to earn money is by defrauding people. For example, in James 5, very serious statement with this regard in verse 4, behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields, could be the guy who mowed your grass for us, or whoever works for us, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you. Okay, you owe this person for what they've done and you haven't paid them. It cries out against you. And the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Here you've got these people. They came and they plowed, they harvested your field. They worked for you and you're not paying them. You're not paying them. And the cry against you is coming to the Lord's ears. This is serious. If somebody has rendered service to you, worked for you, been employed by you, you pay them what is owed them and what is promised them. To hold that back is to send a cry of defrauding up to the very ears of God Himself. Well, we could say more about that, but let me give you a last one. Another way not to make money is by gambling. Gambling is not an option for the Christian. An appeal to chance is incompatible with trust in the sovereignty of God. An appeal to chance is a way to waste the resources God has given you. And frankly, gambling, for the most part, is an exploitation of the poor. And all it does is draw the money out of the people who have little to start with, funnel it through a bureaucracy like the state lottery, and with the ostensible purpose of the state using it to assist those poor people, but by the time it gets back to them, it's one-tenth of what it was when they gave it. Or when they bought the ticket. It is exploitation. It risks God's provision. It is incompatible with the sovereignty of God. So we don't get money these false ways, by illicit means, stealing it, by taking it from people in need, by defrauding those we owe it to, or by gambling.
You're listening to John MacArthur as he continues his study titled, Whose Money Is It Anyway? Along with teaching each day here on Grace to You, John also serves as president of the Master's University and Seminary in Southern California. John, today you outline 9 qualities that describe those who love money, folks who build their lives around the pursuit of wealth. Would it be fair to add a 10th quality, maybe anxiety, meaning the more you focus on money and look at it as a source of security, the more you're tempted to worry.
Well, yeah, the more money means to you, the more you worry about what's happening to it. If it means very little to you, except as a necessary reality that provides basic things, then you don't live in fear of losing it. But if you have an overly preoccupied attention to how much money you have and how much money you acquire and how much money you keep and how much money you save and how much your your wealth grows, then obviously anything that tends to threaten that becomes a cause for anxiety. It doesn't necessarily become an issue just if you have a lot of money. That anxiety, that worry can be a reality if you have just a little bit of money. It's really where you put your attention. I'd like to help you to think about money worry-free. You can do that. And I want to offer a free CD, a message that I gave called Jesus, Worry, and You. That's it, Jesus, Worry, and You. We'll send a copy free to anyone who asks. Worry is a real temptation. It robs you. It steals your joy. It steals away even your productivity. People worry about losing their jobs, diminishing savings or investment accounts. They worry about health. They worry about relationships. They worry about choices. They worry about other people and the issues in their lives. Worry is a kind of spiritual cancer. A lot of it is attached to money, but it's also attached to all kinds of other things in life. And the message that I would like to send you free of charge on Jesus, Worry, and You shows you how to break free from worry. You can live in confidence. You can live in trust toward God, God's character, God's provision, God's promises. You can trust Him no matter what you're facing, no matter what shows up in the future. There is a way to live worry-free. Contact us today right here at Grace to You. Ask for the message, Jesus, Worry, and You, or simply the message on worry, and we'll send it to you. It's a free CD, free to everyone who asks.
A friend, whether you're struggling financially, concerned about an upcoming career decision, or you're apprehensive about the spiritual well-being of your friends and loved ones, this message can show you the key to anxiety-free living. Pick up a free copy of the CD, Jesus, Worry, and You. Mention that as you call, write, or email us today. Speaking of email, send us your name and address to letters@gty.org. Or request the CD when you write to Grace to You, Post Office Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. And remember, you can also request that CD when you call our toll-free number, 1-800-55-GRACE. Again, 800-55-GRACE. Just let us know you like a free copy of Jesus, Worry, and You. And also, you can do that at the website, gty.org. As you get in touch, make sure you let us know how John MacArthur's teaching is shaping your perspective on finances. Perhaps John's recent series on the battle for the beginning has equipped you to talk to your neighbors about creation, sin, and the gospel. Or if someone you know has come to faith after hearing one of John's broadcasts, why not send us your story? You can email it to letters@gty.org or mail it to Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. You can also leave your feedback online at the website, gty.org. And now for John MacArthur and the staff, I'm Carl Miller with a reminder to watch Grace to You Television, Sundays on DirecTV, Channel 378. And then do come back tomorrow for another installment of the study, Whose Money Is It Anyway? As John continues, unleashing God's truth, one verse at a time on Grace to You.